All right, welcome back. It is episode number 4 of the Habibi Show. I don't know why you're watching or listening, but you are, and our listeners are continuing to grow.
Oh yeah, now we have like 4.
We have, yeah, 3.5.
One is underage.
And Justin counts and, too. So.
Well, Justin, employees and their families don't count.
No, but thank you again for tuning in, subscribing to the YouTube channel. Don't forget, it's thehabibishow.tv. Subscribe, hit the subscribe button, share also as well. And thanks to everybody who's also commenting on YouTube and sending us remarks saying that they're enjoying the show.
Yes.
I am Hector. This is truly, really who it's really all about. My wife told me I need to shut up and let Sammer talk more. So.
No, we're doing fine. This, I'm Sammer. Sammer.
Yes. And the Sammer and I am Hector. And the third person I always talk about, my wife, Eva. I love her to death.
Yes.
And she is obviously, she is here, but not here every time I talk about her. But glad to have you guys tuning in. Sammer, you just got back from Mexico.
Yes.
But while you were gone, there was some crazy stuff that's happened.
What happened?
In my life.
I am so sorry.
I lost my father-in-law.
Yeah.
I've been married now 21 years, and I spent more time with my father-in-law than I did with, you know, in the last, I've been alive 42 years and spent most of my life now with Eva's family than versus the family that I was raised with, if that makes sense. When I first met my wife, the father-in-law, he, you know, Eva was the baby of the family, and at our, we were looking some through old videos and stuff like that, and it was really nice to see that. And he didn't want to give her away. Like he loved me, he liked me a lot, but obviously holding on to his youngest daughter, and so we're going through kind of a crazy time right now with the funeral planning, and then we got the quinceañera coming up in April. And of course, my wife's dealing with all of that right now. My wife's a very strong person, and she's a strong person because of her dad. Her dad was a very tough man, and he created some very tough children. She's tougher than me.
And you need that in your life because otherwise you lose control.
Yes, she's my anchor. Exactly. You hear that, Eva?
She's a wonderful person.
You are my anchor.
Yes.
But
now tell us the truth.
So, but let me tell you what happened. So, you know,
well, sorry about your father-in-law and Eva, my condolences for the, you know, your father passing, but I hope everybody will start seeing a good life.
Yeah, you know, he's no longer, you know, struggling and going through pain. You know, he was in his 80s and, you know, he was just getting to that point in life where it was just time to move on. But he was kind of, he was struggling for a long time and not being able to breathe and being in hospice for, I think, almost 6-8 months, a long time.
Yeah.
And we were there to witness him when he passed. And so there's now going to go something more from something serious to something funny and probably one of the most embarrassing moments of my life.
I've been waiting for this now. He's been telling me for 2-3 days, wait.
Yes.
Okay, tell me. No, I'll wait till the podcast.
Okay. So, you know, back... You know, we were there and, you know, my father-in-law was in a room next door. He had just passed. And all of my in-laws, where we were in the room, including extended family, were in the room and we were watching old videos, you know, old VHS cassette tapes and stuff like that when they were young. And then my father-in-law passed and then they came back into the room and I said, hey, guys. And I had somehow my tapes when I was a youngster – before I was married, got mixed into with my father-in-law's tapes, right? And one of those tapes I had, I recorded the Houston Rockets 94-95 championship series. I was a big Rockets, I still am, but I was a huge Rockets fan when I was a kid. And so this is 94-95. So on the tape, it said Rockets, right? So I brought the family back in the room and I said, hey, you guys want to watch the Rockets? You know, because we're watching family movies all day long. And so I'm there in front of the TV. You already know where this is going.
This is something you see, like, from Chevy Chase movies.
Oh, man. So I put the tape in. The whole family's sitting where they're waiting for the tape to play. And you know, then I play it, and then I heard moaning.
That must have been a very good vacation
with Eva, with my wife's
that
aunts.
Was a good game. The Rockets during that time, they were really...
Robert Horney was playing. It was the back-to-back champions.
Oh, my God.
Clyde, the glide-in Drexler.
Yeah.
It was a pretty crazy...
Okay, who was on the video?
Okay, so it was a very well-endowed black dude. And it was a white girl, right?
For real?
Yes, and they were going at it. She was going to town on him. And I just stood there in shock. And I was like, wait, this is not the Rockets.
Well, in a way it is. In a way it is a Rocket.
But I was...
Wow. That was very educational night.
I'm glad my kids weren't there, but there was, you know, some other youngsters that were there, but they were more mature.
Yeah.
The 18-something year olds. But my in-laws were there. And I said, all right, wait. I stop button on the VCR, and
you still have a VCR.
Somebody had to bring it, so somebody actually borrowed it
because
we didn't have it. But my father-in-law had all these tapes.
Yes.
Somehow my personal tapes were mixed in.
Yes.
And wow. So I said, hey, I've been looking for this tape for years. I love the Rockets. I want to watch it again. So I got the family around and hit play, and that happened. And I froze, and I turned around, and I said, listen, guys. I turned around. My heart dropped. Could you imagine the embarrassment? And I said, listen, I was about 14 or 15 when I recorded this, and I don't remember recording that part of the game, right? I told them. They were just like, what was that?
That was the halftime show.
Right.
Well, it's good it wasn't you and Eva. I thought that's what you were going to say.
No.
That was a tape of, like, the wedding night or something.
I've never done that, but...
But when he said, I knew it's not you.
Because word got around that word got around to the extended family who weren't there saying, hey, we heard you played a porn during, right, 10 minutes after your father-in-law had passed.
That was a good icebreaker. That might not be a bad idea. I mean, life goes on.
It did. And my father-in-law was a prankster.
Yes.
And the day before that, while he was in the bed in the room next door, I was actually sharing with that same family that was there. I was sharing with them about how I pranked him. And I never told my father-in-law about the prank. But I'm pretty sure my father-in-law heard me while I was saying it, because they said that when you pass, one of the last things you lose is your hearing, right? And so hearing actually continues to a certain amount of time frame even after your heartbeat stops. But the day before, I was sharing a story about how I pranked him. And he never knew about it, and he had to because I pranked him. I had put a false listing on Craigslist and told on put on Craigslist that and his phone had a ringtone, and it was hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. This man was a very religious man, right? And so very old school religious. And so back, I was sharing that story about how he made me upset for some reason. We're always kind of bantering back and forth. But he said something really stupid, and I said, you know what, I'm gonna play a prank on him. He had an old Jeep in his driveway, so what I did, I took pictures of it, and I put it on Craigslist. And on the Craigslist listing, I put it like half of what it should be, the value, right? So I put it for $3,000. And I said, but call only, I work graveyard shifts, so only call between the hours of 12 midnight and 4 in the morning. So once midnight started, his phone would ring. It was ringing constantly. And I would hear it because I was at the time I lived with them, and I was in the room next door, and I would hear his phone going, hallelujah, 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 for hours. And I could hear him cussing. What the fuck? What the heck? I'm not. Who is this? Tell Craig to stop. Because he didn't know what Craigslist was. So he goes, tell Craig to stop calling me. I'm not Craig, and my Jeep is not for sale. And I would hear him cussing. And then his phone stopped ringing. Well, I realized the next day he was able to change his number. Well, the next day I snuck up into his room, and I was able to get on his computer, and I saw on his desktop that his new number, he put it on a Post-it note.
So he did it
again the next night. He was so mad. And he never knew that was me. And then it wasn't until like another 30 days I got the mail, and realized that he had put a piece of envelope in the for the mailman to pick up and send out, and he had written a letter to Craig. He didn't realize that Craigslist was not a man, like it wasn't an individual. And it says, "Dear Craig, please, I'm going to sue your beep, beep, beep. Please remove my posting. I cannot believe I changed my number two times." But I shared that story while he was still a day away from passing. Well, literally 10 minutes after he had passed, he pulled the ultimate prank on me. And that was right after 10 minutes, I pushed in that Rockets tape, and it was not the Rockets. It was Robert Horney.
But I want to watch that game.
And so
and we watched that game together.
I was so freaked out. My heart dropped. And I told Eva, this is the most embarrassing thing that's probably ever happened to me. Now, I've done some really embarrassing things in my life, but this has to be one of the top three.
Yeah.
I'm just doing it publicly.
But it wasn't like you and Eva, so it's okay.
No. I get it. But Eva's family or they're religious.
And Eva was watching?
Yeah, she was watching.
She probably wouldn't get some popcorn.
I mean, Eva's aunts.
Let's have fun now.
Yeah, Eva's aunts were there on the table. Like, they're just sitting there on the couch waiting for they're anticipating the Rockets.
I bet you they were happily surprised. You put some spice in their life.
So I immediately took the VCR. I said, "Hey, guys, we're not gonna watch the Rockets." But I told Eva, "Hey, I gotta
let me show you a porn."
No, because I didn't recognize it, but I ended up taking the tape and we went to another room. I said, "Eva, I want you to watch with me because I would recognize this." So I went upstairs and I took a sneak peek of it again, and I said, "This is not mine. Like, this is not my porn. Like, I would know."
What kind of porn do you like?
Well, it was not that type. It wasn't that type. Like, I would remember 15, 16 years old if I had recorded over the Houston Rockets. Makes sense. I would record, to record over the Houston Rockets. So what I think was, and this is kind of, this is rated MA, Justin, so close your ears. So when I was, when I was 19, 20 years old, and, my previous employers are probably listening right here, but I would get, I lived with a bunch of roommates, right? And I would get the projector from my office because they would let me borrow it. I would take it home on the weekends. And on the weekends, we would put it in the back in those days, we didn't have big screen TVs, remember? So projectors with 80-inch, 120-inch, screens, that was incredible. So we would play GTA, Grand Theft Auto. We would play PlayStation. And then, of course, in the background, we would have porn playing on the projector while we were there, and some of my friends would smoke or whatever. And this is Justin. This is when I was in college, And so, Justin, why are you judging me, Justin? I'm saying the truth. And so, while we're there, and the porn would be in the background, what I think is that my tapes, I was in that room, that somehow one of my roommates had either tried to play a prank on me by recording over the Rockets, knowing how much I love the Rockets, that eventually one day I would play it again. And I haven't played that in 22 years or 24 years. And 24 years later, I hit the play button in front of my wife's family, and it's porn.
And it was like four quarters?
I don't know.
Like, it lasted the whole game.
I don't know. The tape actually got...
No timeout, nothing.
No. They were going at it.
Good game.
Yeah, Clyde Drexler and Robert Horney.
That's something fun and probably will be remembered forever.
For the rest of my life.
And your aunt's lives and your wife's
They will always remember that. But
it's going to be your code whenever Eva says, "Hey, you want to go see the Rockets?" No. Then you know what that means. It's not the game.
Right.
Do you want to go play horse?
Right. I'm going to get a shoot a free throw. Oh, you personal technical fouls here. But no, I thought that was crazy. And that was, that was so embarrassing. But I thought it was really interesting that it happened right after my father-in-law had passed. Almost like he pulled the ultimate.
That he pranked him and now he got me back. And I really believe that those things happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I can tell you some stories about, but I don't know if that's. Well, I mean, my son passed away many years ago, and at his funeral, when you have songs planned for the funeral?
Yes.
So we had the the Eric Clapton song, No Tears in Heaven. Mm-hmm. You know that song?
Yes.
And to play first, and the second was the Wind Beneath My Wings.
Yes,
right?
By Bette
Midler.
Yeah.
And then as we're sitting at the funeral place, mm-hmm. waiting for them to play the songs, so my wife at the time and I said, you know, I wish it was like the other way around, like The Wind Beneath My Wing first.
Right.
And sure enough, it played that way.
Wow.
And nobody changed anything. And even my wife at the time and I, we looked at each other like shocked. How did it happen? And then you just kind of look up and smile and you know that they're around.
Right.
So that, to me, that prank
was like perfect timing. And my father-in-law,
it's probably he was just saying, hey, you see, I can still get you.
Right.
<Yes.
laughs>
So, you know.
It's him, but it probably was his.
Well, it's not over yet.
I hope he was not watching this soon recently. But it was in his stash. But I mean, like, it was in the...
So, he had his own VHS?
Yeah, he's the only one I can think.
Well, his was the real game.
Right.
The Rockets game.
Yeah. Right.
Yours
that's it. I'll take it. But I had to tell Eva, I said, Eva, this is not mine. Like, you know, I would own up to it if it was mine. Okay, so if you're watching or listening or whatever you're doing, you're probably in a car driving to work or something. But I'm going to tell you right now, if you're going to be heading off to a business conference, a business meeting, if you're going to go to the airport, taking the family somewhere, you may need to make sure you lock in ExcelsiorLimo.com. That's Excelsior Transportation. My buddy, my brother, my father, my grandmother is also in charge of Excelsior Transportation. They are the best. And I'm not saying one of the best. They are the best transportation companies in the world. Bar none. Nothing compares to them. It's been a privilege of mine to use them. We use them for our clients at times. We use them for myself. And then there's been times where I actually use you guys to come use Excelsior to come pick up my kids, to take them to school or from across the city. So I trust them with my own family. And that says a lot.
Well, because he's not allowed within 200 feet from any schools. That's why you call.
So if you're like me and not allowed within 200 feet of a school, make sure you reach out to ExcelsiorLimo.com. Excelsior Transportation, the best transportation company in the world.
I think that's a great story to also remind everybody, look, just have fun.
Yeah, just live life.
You can still cry while you're having fun. And it's not about what people might think. Mm-hmm. Your feelings are inside.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I remember when, when my son passed away. I'm sorry. No, when my mother passed away. So I was in Egypt, mm-hmm. and Egypt have traditions for like thousands of years. And one of them is like when somebody, you know, dies,
right.
then there's 40 days of mourning. Mm. And 40 days you don't leave the house and women will wear black and you just have coffee and people keep coming to your house to, you know, to show their care and love. But honestly, it's depressing, 40 days of doing that. I mean, you get to the point, but you do it because that's what everybody expects.
Right.
And I remember when my mother passed away in 2005, it was my wife, myself, and my daughter who went there. And after the funeral, we all went to the house and, of course, expected to stay at the house for like at least a week or 2 weeks, not go out because people were coming. And I was like, no, let's go. How about we just go to my mom's favorite seafood restaurant in Alexandria? And, of course, everybody else said, oh, no, because people would think we don't care.
Right.
I said, well, at this point, I really don't think about what people think. I just want to do what I think my mom will want me to do. I want to do what will get us together as a family, mm-hmm. and really celebrate her life.
Right.
Not stick to traditions that may be depressing.
Yeah.
And it's totally not her personality. My mother was always laughing and funny and happy. So at first, nobody else wanted to go. So I told my wife, I'm like, oh, let's go. We're going. Then they said, wait. Then one brother said, okay. And his wife said, okay. We ended up all going. I tell you, we had the best evening ever eating at her favorite restaurant. The wait staff knew her very well. They came and celebrated with us.
Wow.
And we were crying and laughing. And meanwhile, we left a message at the house. Anybody come ask for us, just tell them where we are. My God, it turned out to be like a big
party.
Celebration. Happy, very happy, and
right.
crying, but I don't think it's sad. I mean,
yeah.
we just miss the people. But anyway, I mean, sticking to certain traditions, sometimes it's not really the best thing.
Right.
Because sometimes we don't know why, we just kind of duplicate it. But in reality, just do what you feel like doing.
Yeah, I think, you know, death teaches us a lot. And people, I've always heard this before, is that people handle or respond to death differently. And it's not until you are faced with death on how you realize how you're going to react.
Yes.
I used to respond to death maybe a little bit more, I was a bit more like cautious or a bit more dramatic with
yes.
it before. However, like COVID happened. And when COVID happened and I started realizing, hey, we had over like I mean, about millions of people that died across the world and people were dying left and right. And I remember once we went to like 4 or 5 funerals during the year of COVID and you almost got numb to death. Like you got used to, not used to, it's kind of sad, but you kind of got numb to it.
Yeah.
And I just realized that, man, life is too short to sit there. And these people, while, yes, they struggled and stuff like that, but they're probably in a much better place, more likely.
Yes.
They're in a much better place than when we are here. We should be celebrating and enjoying exactly. the moments we have. Because let's say we go into a 40-day period
mourning.
Of mourning. I just heard a story recently. Somebody was that they had buried their dad on Friday and then buried their mom 2 weeks later. Like their mom
yeah,
died 2 weeks
yeah,
later.
Yeah, it happens.
You know, and that was not planned. Nope, that wasn't just, it was a shocking event. But imagine if you had just stayed through a period of just mourning.
That's right. Why?
You stole two
Why?
Weeks of just
I
not
have,
enjoying life.
I have a lot of good memories about people mm-hmm. that passed.
Right.
Than the days before they passed.
Yeah.
These days, I don't remember. Like, for example, and really, these are things that's very valuable to me. My son, he was 2 years old, and he was diagnosed that many, many years ago. He was diagnosed with brain cancer. We knew he was not gonna be around. So anyway, we were in and out of the hospital. So that day, we knew that that's the day.
Right.
And I remember, like, holding him really tight because not afraid or not sad. I just wanted to cherish the last few seconds. And he took his last breath in my arms And I remember being relieved that he looked comfortable.
Right.
He was not in right. pain. But the thing that happened that was very, very, I think, valuable to me until today and until forever. When you lose a parent, we're programmed to
right.
that. It's sad, but we expect it.
Sure.
But when you lose a son
child,
or a
yeah.
daughter, that's totally opposite to what
yeah,
we are
I could imagine.
Programmed for. So when it happened, I thought this is probably the closest to actually me going.
Right.
Because we don't know how we feel when we go.
Yeah.
But this was really close. And what happened, you know, when you hear the term, oh, my life flashed in front of my eyes? Really, my life flashed. Mm. And Hector, I promise you, it felt like an hour, but probably it was like 5 seconds or 3 seconds. I saw my life in a colored movie. Like, it was like black and white. It was not black and white. It was colored. I think I zoned out for a few seconds.
Right.
But do you know what I really saw? I didn't really see what kind of car I'm driving or what kind of house I have. I saw that certain moments, the moment that I took my first salary and when I was like 20-something years old, I was in the military in Egypt, which was mandatory, and they give you like $24 after 6 months. That was my salary. And that was my first salary. And I took my mom to her favorite seafood restaurant
right.
and bought her a purse. Mm. I saw that moment, but I saw the moment as if I'm reliving that moment. I was like in that movie that I'm watching.
Right.
And I saw her smiling, and I remember what she was wearing. It was very strange. And also I saw other moments with my dad or my son or my brother. So it kind of made me realize.
Wait, did you experience that right after?
In the moment, right when he took his last breath.
Wow.
I didn't see anything. I was in the hospital at Texas Children, and I didn't see anything else. It was like 3:30 in the morning. It was dark. But I didn't see anybody else. I didn't see my wife. I didn't see the nurses. I didn't see anybody. I just saw, like, I'm having an out-of-body experience as I'm reliving that moment when I was my mom at the dinner. And then after that, I saw moments with my dad. So what I'm trying to say is, I think when that day comes, I want to make sure that I did the right thing when it was needed, because that's what I'm going to see again. And I don't want to see the moments that, or minimize the moment that I didn't do the right thing when it was needed.
Right.
So I tell everybody, I tell myself, look, if you see yourself in a moment that you have, you know clearly what you have to do, do it. Because you don't want to come to that moment when you're gone or going and you say, oh my God, why didn't I do this?
Right. Have live, go with regrets.
Exactly.
So in that moment with the, with your son, if you'd be okay with talking about this,
yeah.
But that moment
he was
your
very
son,
cute.
That's very, I'm sure.
I knew, you know what? His name is Ferris.
Ferris, yes.
Because I loved that movie, Ferris Bueller Day Off. Oh, it was either Ferris or Cameron.
Yes.
These were the two names from the movie Ferris Bueller. And I loved that movie.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And by the way, that had to have been a very traumatic, obviously, very traumatic, where you traumatized.
Well, the trauma was when he got sick. When he was like, no.
That was traumatic.
Yeah, but when he left.
You felt at peace.
I felt like it was like a light, what do you call it, beam, that became millions of light beams that became everybody else. And really, since then, I have not met a stranger.
Wow.
Because I felt like, okay, well, my son
isn't
that person. And I know I'm going to get in trouble one day talking to strangers, but so far it hasn't happened.
No, it hasn't. Except for that time you almost got kicked out of Mexico.
That's, yeah.
Just kidding. But, you know, if it wasn't for that experience, though, that you said that your life flashed for you. With
yes.
It almost like there was a supernatural intervention. Almost like there was say, hey, everything's going to be okay.
Oh, yes.
Like God was almost, was telling you, hey, was showing you there's much.
I guess God showed me what mattered.
Yeah.
I at least that's how I believe. I believe that I saw what really mattered.
Right.
What mattered is not all these materialistic things. It's good. I mean, like my daughter told me one time, it's better to be depressed by in a nice house by the pool than depressed in one bedroom apartment. Well, I really agree with her.
Right.
But at the end of the day, really, we have to, I'm not telling anybody how to feel or how to, what to do, but that's how I felt that moment. It changed my life. It changed my life that many times, you know, like I was in Mexico. I was in Cozumel, and there is the fountain in downtown.
Right.
You know, there is a fountain.
By the clock.
By the clock, by the Big Ben,
yes.
You know. And I think it wasn't working. And there was water in that fountain with the cables exposed and kids playing in that water. I could have easily left. I couldn't, because I knew if I didn't do what I think by getting those kids out of that fountain,
right,
maybe that moment will come back when I'm gone, saying, why didn't you do something?
Yeah.
You know?
Only so here, I went there. You might find out later that's three or four kids got electrocuted.
And then, so we got those kids out, and I had a friend of mine, and she was very, very sweet. And she bought them coloring books and stuff, and now they're sitting coloring instead of playing in the fountain with the cable exposed.
Yeah, you did a good thing.
And then I went to a police officer. And I think he had too many beers, I think, because it was like, call 911. I was like, what? So I called 911, and there was a recording saying, oh, por favor, call the numero 10. And I called, of course, nobody answered.
Wow.
But at least I did my part by getting those kids out of the water. So what I'm saying is, many times we pass by not noticing what's happening around us. Be aware of what's happening around you.
Speaking of,
you don't know how you can change somebody's life.
Speaking of, you know, of swimming in fountains, you know, you worked at the Warwick.
Yeah.
You know that fountain right across the
street? Yeah, the Mecum fountain.
The Mecum. You know, I used to go swimming in that when I was a kid.
That is
so
horrible.
You didn't save me then, brother.
Actually, I have that video, but it says on it the Texans.
So now that's the right.
We're gonna watch
that's the right one. If it says the Texans on it. That is the right that is my porn. So, but I'm gonna wait till wait to play that to when I'm gone.
but you know, I want to tell you something. I forgot in the beginning of the show. You know, this podcast has been like so therapeutic, and I really thank you. Was having that idea, but I received a phone call today from I didn't know who, and the guy was talking to me in English, but I can tell there is a slight accent.
Right.
So I knew it's not American, maybe European or Canadian. It had some European kind of accent. And he was asking me, oh, so do you rent limos? I said, yeah. I said, well, what else do you do? Is that story we mentioned.
Yes.
And then he started laughing. He said, Samer, this is JP. Okay, JP. Mm-hmm. Of course, that took a few minutes,
right.
Him, like, you know, pulling my legs. And then he said, yeah, is it Samer or Samir? Because I know you don't like the name Samir, because we said that.
Yes.
So then he said, oh, this is JP. JP is a friend of mine from Egypt. We grew up together in Alexandria. His name is Jean-Pierre Louis.
Right.
Obviously, it's not an Egyptian name, but that tells you during that time, Egypt was a very melting pot from Greeks. But anyway, he left Egypt right after high school, and we kind of lost touch, and he went to Canada, and then later on, many years later, I see that he has like a great success with a company called JPL, and also he has a Tosca style hair product that's doing really, really good.
I could use some.
Well, yeah, right. Really, I mean, I'm very proud of him. I always followed his news through Facebook or other parents, but we reconnected because of this podcast. He said,
awesome.
I always knew who you are because we were friends, but there's a lot of stories I didn't know about you. And I think I can't wait to see him because he's a very, very dear friend and a wonderful guy. And his company is like one of the leading hair products and cosmetic companies, really.
Congratulations, JP, and also thanks.
And he told me to say, by the way, Hector did a great job. But I think he's just being nice.
Yeah, just wait till after he hears this podcast where about playing porn in front of my in-law.
But also, you know, he brought up something else. How many of us come from other countries and do? I mean, you didn't come from another country, but your parents maybe,
yeah,
Mr. Garcia,
my grandpa
yes, Garcia.
Right.
You see, that's why America is an amazing place.
Yes.
It gives opportunity to many of us
to
come with nothing and do something.
I teach my kids that, you know, people are literally dying to get here.
Absolutely.
To have the opportunity.
Absolutely.
When you have it already here.
Yes.
And people pay a price to get here, and they have the opportunity. And to seize that opportunity, seize that moment, because here, while it's still tough, you know, it's not saying we're the most, you know, the perfect place.
Yes.
But we are, at the end of the day, we are the best in the world.
Yes.
When it comes to opportunities, and you could, if you dream of something, you chase it, you could do it. One of my best friends, she started something just for as a hobby that's now grown to over 1 million followers. And she's being awarded in the city of Houston for Houston's Hero of the Year.
Was it the Grizzly?
Yeah, Grizzly's Hoodies.
Yeah,
yes.
I watched. Yeah. It was on TV at Channel 39 or something.
Right. And Crime Stoppers is awarding her. And somebody, you know, and not only that, she came. I'm not gonna say this because she shares it as well, and she's proud of it, and she should be. You know, a person who was 10, 15 years ago that was in jail for 3 years, come out and just start all over in life. And pursues something, and she's doing phenomenal. And to become a hero to Houston, no matter what your background is, you know, you could clean up yourself, you could start all over here, and you get second, third, fourth chances here. And, you know, that's the beauty behind where we live.
Does she watch this podcast?
I sent it to her, yes. I did send her to the podcast.
Well, Grizzy, I'm very proud of you, knowing your story, but you are damn hot too.
I'll make sure to tell her that.
No, I already told her. What do you mean? I already told her.
But you know, going back to the purpose of this podcast, you know, whether we have, you know, 10 people watching or listening, and we have 1 million people following us.
Yes.
The purpose is really maybe people can learn from our experiences
in
life. And I had told Eva the other day, my wife, by the way, I had told my wife that, you know, hey, I got to be honest and be truthful about my experience. And while she says she's private, I'm not a private person when it comes to these types of things, because I know that there's probably somebody that's probably listening and watching and probably going through a struggle in life or going through something in their business or it could be just Justin sitting there behind, you know, doing production. By the way, shout out to Justin.
Yeah.
You know, it could be somebody like Justin who needs to hear that, hey, you know, Hector's just a normal guy. He's gone through this. And also talk about how Hector or Samer had overcome these challenges. Like, for instance, you losing your son, Ferris.
Yes, yes.
You know, and, you know, that's to me, that's inspirational.
I didn't lose him.
No.
It's not like I was at the mall and I couldn't find him.
But you get what I mean, right? Yeah, I mean, well, he passed away.
No, I know what you mean, yes.
You're overcoming and you probably, and I've said this too as well, is that even in death, that good comes out.
Of course. I wish we can change that word death.
Yes.
It sounds so negative.
Right.
How about transitioning?
Yeah, people say that transitioning, right? Yes.
Or elevating or something.
Homecoming.
I mean, homecoming.
They call it homecoming, yeah.
Because we come from somewhere.
Yes.
Where do we come from? And most of us don't ask where we come from. We ask where we're going. But I think it's important to know where we came from.
And I don't believe there's such thing as coincidences. I believe that that God has a way of orchestrating things where people, while we make our own decisions, he has a way of kind of nudging things away. We're kind of like bumper cars, right?
Yes.
It's kind of like when you're driving down a freeway and you know that there's guardrails. Sometimes there's a guardrail and sometimes there's not. Sometimes there's there to get you in the right lane to get you to your destination that he wants for you in your life. And sometimes that destination is not necessarily for you.
Yes.
It could be for somebody else.
That's right. Because you never know how many lives we touched.
Right.
You know, even just saying good morning to a stranger that maybe put a smile on their face. Who knows? That stranger, maybe they're on their way to commit suicide.
Yeah.
And just you saying good morning and make them smile, maybe that was the hope they were looking for. I don't know.
Right.
Or maybe it's the opposite. If you say good morning, somebody makes them say, oh, I don't want to live anymore. But, you know, but the thing is how many lives we touch. And you know, like we said, we wanted to mention something about marriage too. I also compliment on your relationship with your wife because it's real.
Right.
With its beauty and its hard moments, and that's real life.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, people that don't fight or argue, something is not right.
Yeah, we fight.
What?
It's a beautiful disaster, you know, of my marriage. It is.
You know, I tell you something.
What?
I've been married twice, okay? And I have to say they were both very decent people, honestly, and there's nothing bad I can say. I always think marriage that ends is like a good partnership that ended. It doesn't not every partnership in business ends because it's bad. It just ends because direction changed.
Right.
But I remember a lesson that's very, very, like, it was the first lesson I learned from being married. I was like 27, she was 23. And of course, I just came from Egypt like a couple of years earlier. And then I was lonely and I said, yeah, I need to get married. And she's beautiful and smart. And I wanted to be like a modern man,
right?
That we all share opinions and all equal, and it doesn't matter who wants to do what. I believed in that. You notice I said I believed.
You believed. It was a past tense.
So I remember she wanted to do something at the house, like I can't remember, like decorating or furniture, and I wasn't really agreeing with that. And I said, I don't agree with it. I said, yes, but I think it will work. I said, well, okay. In my mind, this is how marriage should be, right? And I believe that's how it should be. So anyway, 6, 7, 8 months later, it doesn't work. You're engaged, right? Or you have a girlfriend.
Soon.
So please listen to the story.
Yes, soon.
So 6, 7 months later, whatever she didn't work, which is fine. I mean, we all do things like that. And I was very nice. I didn't want to say, well, I told you so. That's ugly.
Yeah.
I said, oh, that's okay. Don't worry about it. You remember I said maybe it's best not to do it, but I understand. You know what she told me?
What did she
And if she's going to be watching this someday, this is, you know that happened.
Right.
So anyway, you know what? She told me something. I was shocked. She said, well, why did you let me? I felt like somebody just slapped me so hard. I was like, what? She said, well, you knew that this is not going to work. Why did you let me do it? At that moment, I realized a very big lesson.
Right.
That no matter what's going to happen in the marriage, if it's good, she will take the credit.
Right.
If it's bad, right. it will be my fault.
Sure.
So since I learned that, I insisted on everything I wanted to do, because if I'm going to take the blame, I'd rather be my decision. So, you right. know, but of course, maybe I don't necessarily mm-hmm. 100% feel this way, but the fact that somebody told you, why did you let me? It gave me the idea that in marriage, there is a leader and there is a family
right.
leader. And whoever that leader is will take the responsibility for anything good or bad.
Right.
So just make sure to understand that if it's bad, it's your fault.
That's all.
Accept it. I cannot say enough about Brand Nation. Brand Nation, I still say Side Jab, because that's how I met them in 2016, 17.
Yes, 16.
It was Side Jab. First, you know, I have an accent. I thought it was Side Jab. Side Jab, like when you side jab someone, but it was Side Jab. And yeah. they really changed, it changed the position of our company and brought us up to modern life.
Yeah.
And really, we saw the increase in business almost immediately. And it's still going on till now. Like, for example, 2 days ago, I received a text from one of his teammates. And he was saying, hey, this is George. Do you guys need anything? Really, I love the fact that they don't have to wait for somebody to complain to change it. They reach out to you to make sure, are you okay? We haven't heard from you for a while. It shows a level of care I really appreciate. And I miss from seeing that level of care with other businesses. So really, Brand Nation, they're going to be like your partner. They'll work for you. They are very creative. You're going to see an immediate change in your business.
That's right. So if you need that jab in your business and you need that branding and complete marketing, whether it's a podcast or if it's a website or even a TV commercial, give us a call, 713-999-4661. That's gobrandnation.com. I always tell Eva that I can never, I'm always doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Right? There's always something wrong with me, but I kind of come to the conclusions of that. That's okay. I'm going to do something wrong today.
But also right. I really learned that, you know, marriage is a great partnership, really.
Sure.
And in order for it to last, you have to be good friends. But also we have to realize that there are moments when it's not a good idea to talk.
Sure.
There's a moment where, look, there's not going to be a winner or a loser. Just walk away. Because right. 20, 30 minutes later, it's not going to matter. It's going to be fine. But if you insist
say some
doing
of,
it.
Some stupid things in the heat of an argument.
That can maybe will be very hurtful.
Very hurtful. That will yeah. always be there.
So it's best to walk away. It's best to tempt.
I
to
do
resist
that.
The temptation.
Yeah, I try my best to do that. You know,
to what?
To walk away or just be quiet.
Yeah. Be careful what you're going to say now.
Right.
I think you're going to have to walk away tonight.
Sometimes it backfires, you know.
Well, if it backfires, that, right. yes, exactly.
But I'd rather it backfire than also not make it worse by saying something stupid on my furthermore,
exactly.
right?
I think women are better than men in many areas.
The worst
areas.
Thing you can tell a woman in that moment is just to calm down, because she will do the
no.
opposite.
No, you know what I learned?
Have you done that, Justin? Yeah. Have you ever told a girlfriend or a fiance or whatever?
Just relax.
Calm down.
Yeah, calm down.
A long time ago.
Yeah, and how'd that turn out? Not good.
That explained the bruise that's still on your
right.
No, but also even because I think women, they want to fix it now.
Yes.
And sometimes it's not fixable now. Just walk away. And even if somebody yelling and screaming, resist the temptation to answer.
Yeah.
Walk away. You should understand this is not the real person. Because 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes later, it's going to be okay.
And you know, there's been times in my marriage that, and I'm okay with sharing this, I'm sure Eva is too as well. I'll find out soon. But you know, there's been times in my marriage where it's been close to divorce. I would say about 2 or 3 times.
That's when you watched the Astros tape.
that was the Houston Comets tape.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the Comets?
Yeah.
Remember the Houston Comets
of
WNBA?
Course.
Okay. So, anyways.
There's no marriage without thinking I'm going to divorce.
Yeah, but, you know.
It happens.
In the over the process of overcoming that, like, we went through our hard times. We didn't give up on each other in that. Right. But we were still, some of us, we've probably felt we were giving up on each other. But we learned at the end of the day is, like, you know, not giving up on the structure of the marriage, or the idea of marriage.
That's correct.
And we just didn't give up. And when things started happening, we started, one person started, you know, it's like we're two people rowing a boat, right? We're in a kayak. And marriage is kind of like the first, you know, divorce or something like that, separation. I think it's kind of like where the first person could stop rowing and take a break. The person in the back is still rowing. And that person, hey, I'm doing all the work in this marriage. What are you doing? And then that person starts giving up. Well, what we found is that when somebody starts rowing again, and then we start picking up the row, let's do it. And we decide, let's do this together. We realize that it makes us a lot stronger.
Of course.
And through that overcoming, we've made us closer.
That's right.
Right? And now 21 years, I would tell you this, and this sounds really stupid, and you're gonna laugh at me, Sammer, is that 21 years into this, in marriage, I miss, when I'm not around Eva, I miss her. You would think...
We have a bag. I think I'm gonna throw up. No, know what you mean.
But like,
because she's your best friend.
She's my best friend, yes. And I want her to experience. Like today, I had lunch at Cucharas, and it's a great Mexican restaurant. And me and her have eaten there before, and I love it. And I'm, you know, sitting there with a friend, but I'm like, man, I wish Eva was here.
That's right.
We're doing this podcast constantly.
You're talking.
I'm talking. Yes. I wish Eva was here.
Yes.
You know, I've learned through those moments, maybe in the beginning of the marriage, I wasn't, or maybe in the last couple, maybe some of those moments, there's times where I didn't want Eva around. Yes. And I wanted to get away myself.
Having your own private time is important.
But in those times I wanted to purposely get away because I felt like I was a problem and I felt, yes, that I could never make her happy. But in the overcoming that, it made me fall even more in love with her than what I was the first day I met her.
That's right.
And speaking of, we're going back to death. You know, going back to death.
That was a big move from love to death.
Death, and because in my life, death and marriage goes hand in hand. Very, very strange.
You need to explain this because it could be very misunderstood.
Well, and we're talking about how even through death, good happens.
That's right.
A year before I met Eva, myself and an older brother, and he's a cousin, but I call him like a brother because I had no brothers, and like I grew up with sisters. And my cousins were like my brothers. And my older cousin, I looked up to, adored. That was ever since I was a kid, like a little kid in Pampers and all the way up to I was a teenager. I looked up to him. That was my superhero. And when I got older, we used to hang out. We'd go out, we'd party, and we'd drink. And he would taught me a lot about women. He taught me, like, you know, things that, you know, just like what brothers would do. We'd go do these things. That was me with him. And so I had... It was one night, and I remember he had told me, hey, you know, I'm going to go to a rave. And the rave was go see Cypress Hill. You remember that old band Cypress Hill? It was not a group, the rappers. Well, it was a rave. Oh. And back in the late 90s and early 2000s, the raves were very popular. I think they still are. But I was supposed to go with him to a rave, and I told him, hey, you know what? I'm gonna pass on tonight because I just started a new job, and I'm really tired. But I will join you. We'll go party out tomorrow night. It was Friday night. I will never forget. Friday, January 26, 2001. And I said, you know, I am going to be stay home. And I told him at 5 o'clock that afternoon. I went home, stayed, crashed. Next day, I'm at the house. And I was starting to do my taxes. And I'm knowing on the computer, I was doing my taxes. And I remembered. You know, I said, okay, let me call my cousin because we're supposed to hang out tonight and I haven't heard from him. So I called him. They didn't pick up. I kept calling. I said, hey, bro. Like, I was like, I even left the message. Hey, man, we're supposed to hang out tonight. So what's the plan? What's the deal? Let me know. I called for about 2 hours straight. Didn't hear anything. Well, then I got a phone call that he was found dead and that he was shot and killed.
Oh, my God.
And he was put in the trunk of his car. And I lived, that was one of the, I've had some, probably two times in my life that I had some very depressing times in my life. And that was my first time that I went through a huge depression because I felt that I saw my brother, I wasn't there because I was too tired. I said, let's go tomorrow night. And because I wasn't there, I felt that things would have changed, right? And had I been there, he would have been alive. So a year later, I started coming out of that. I ended up going into to alcoholism, got into beer, and I was drinking and partying a lot, because that was part of my recoup, you know, trying to get bounce back. Was I was finding hope in alcohol and partying, and I remember I woke up on a Sunday morning and I was hungover, and on my alarm clock, and just in those days alarm clocks we had alarm clocks. my alarm clock went off, and I didn't know why my alarm clock got off. And I'm talking about how God works and how things work.
This is paused, right?
No, keep going.
Oh.
Keep going.
Oh.
You know, how things work and how God orchestrates things. Because I didn't have my alarm clock going off on a Sunday morning. But it went off, and what was playing was music that was Christian music. And I didn't have it on that station, but it was Christian music that reminded me when my mom would drag me to church when I was a kid. And it just reflected me. And I got up that morning. I said, I'm going to go into church. And I'm going by myself. So I went to church that morning. Remember, I came from depression, went hungover, went to church, the church house. And I went to church. And when I got there, it was a big church, 1,500, 2,000, you know, seats church. And I saw a woman dancing on stage. And that woman today. And anyways, I felt like something hit me. And I said, I want to talk to that woman.
Yeah.
So I went back home. I said, I love this church, but more importantly, I love that. Whatever that woman was, whoever that was, I need to talk to her. Out of this huge church, I need to find a way to talk to her. The following Sunday, I decided to go back to church. And that following Sunday, I forgot about the woman. I ended up giving my life to God that following Sunday. Long story short, that woman today is my wife today.
And congratulations.
And in death, I have seen God.
That's right.
Anyways, I don't mean to get this all depressing, but.
No, marriage is. I'll tell you.
When I hear your stories, it's inspiring. Here I am, Big Wuss. You know what? I'm getting those testosterone.
I'll get those testosterone shots
so I can stop getting estrogen.
I'll tell you another story that's just a little bit maybe different. But my uncle, he passed away, but him and his wife celebrated their 63rd, 65th wedding anniversary. Yeah. And they both passed away many years ago. But it was so nice to see him like loving each other and happy, and their best friend, their joke. He was like 87 and she was 83. And they went to Vegas to celebrate their 65th anniversary.
Right.
Wedding, they've been married 65 years. And they go to their favorite restaurant, and they go to their favorite bar, have a drink. And by 8:30, they're both tired. They say, okay, let's go to the room. They go to the room, and my uncle was tired, so he put in pajama. And his wife said, no, honey, there's one more thing. Please don't sleep yet. So, okay. So she goes to the bathroom, and she's 83, 84 years old. I mean, she's up there in age. You can tell she used to be beautiful, but, you know. So she changes and put on lingerie and high heels and cologne and perfume, and she looks really good. And my uncle is in bed, tired, ready to sleep. And she jumps out of the bathroom, and she spread her arms. She said, honey, super pussy. And my uncle thought about it for a second, and he said, I think I'll take the soup.
That's marriage.
That after 65 years of marriage, he misunderstood, and he thought she's given him a choice, that or soup, and he took the soup.
Brother, that is what. And Justin's, by the way, is signaling us, because I think
he did.
Yeah, he's okay. Telling. But so he's telling us we're turning this into
some
the
soup.
This Habibi show is turning into the Oprah Winfrey show, but. But I promise you, next time I won't cry. But I appreciate.
No, but you see, it reminded me of my uncle wedding anniversary.
You know, me and Eva, in 21 years, we've only had one argument.
I thought you were going to say I had one soup.
I've only had one argument. I'll let you know when it's done.
That is a horrible way to end this.
So if you're watching the Habibi show, make sure you hit subscribe.
Yes.
Share.
Please.
Share the show.
You're helping us feel better about ourselves.
Yes. And here I am in tears. Thank you for listening and let be my therapist. I'm going to come back. I'm gonna walk out of here worse than I did coming
you
in.
Can put on your clothes now, sir.
I'm wearing nothing underneath. You see a shirt, but I'm not wearing anything underneath. But no. This was a great show, Habibi. I would be.
I'm very happy to always see you and see Justin and Brand Nation.
Yes,
don't forget Brand Nation.
Yeah, and by the way, this is the conversations I have with Sammer. We could probably go on for 3 hours.
Yes.
Talking, but I don't want to bore you guys with this one show. But no, these are our conversations,
yes.
And sometimes, most of the time, I'm crying. Sammer's mostly laughing while I'm crying.
No, really, thank
but,
you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Justin.
No, thank you, Justin. And thank you guys for watching.
Yes.
And until next time, lock it in, the Habibi Show. Sammer, anything?
I really love you all. Every time I look at this camera, I feel like I see all the people I know. And really, thank you for being patient and listening to me. So thank you.
And if you're watching, you know, and listening, let us know. We want to know who's following us. I'm getting messages,
yeah.
too. I'm getting messages, yeah. too. I'm getting messages from Colorado.
Even if you want to say something bad, it's okay.
Yeah.
I like bad.
We're going to be as real as it gets.
Yeah.
As real as my wife lets me.
The bad is going to make us better. The good is going to make us keep going.
And as long as Justin doesn't edit some things out.
Yeah. But he's already given us the finger now instead of...
Yes, that one.
No, thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
and
you,
Habibis, thank you. Habibidi?
Huh?
Habibidi?
What?
Habibidi
for
is the women, right?
For women,
Habibidis?
Habibis, guys, Habibtis.
Habibtis.
Yes.
Okay, Habibtis.
Habibtis and Habibis.
Thank you.
Can't wait to see you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sammer.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. We're going to get better. It's okay.